You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and now to a parody of a John Lennon classic.
Imagine independence. It's legal if we try.
Imagine Independence. That is a promotional video for a group called Yes California, which wanted the Golden State to secede from the United States after the election of Donald Trump in 2016. Yeah, there have been numerous, hundreds of similar ideas to secede, isolate, split, even dissolve this great state since its admission to the Union in 1850.
The map says this is Northern California. This is the state of Jefferson.
Californians are asking for a divorce tonight from the United States.
Yeah, the effort to have the Golden State secede from the Union is back.
Members of the group New California read their Declaration of Independence on Monday.
California's Secretary of State is allowing a wealthy investor to start collecting signatures for his petition.
The country's most populous state could be split in three. That's if Cal 3 gets its way.
Why would you want to split California into three states? I like it the way we are now.
Well, that's good, because it's not going anywhere soon. That is, until you open the door to the El Segundo Museum of Art, or ESMOA.
Here we are at the El Segundo Museum of Art, and
come across this threshold from sidewalk to entryway, and you enter a foreign nation.
Hey, Steve Chiotakis.
Hey, Steve. Nice to see you.
What's your name?
I'm Cole Sternberg.
Cole Sternberg.
My exhibition here.
And welcome to the Free Republic of California. And let's be honest here, you are still in the state of California. This is still the United States. But in artist Cole Sternberg's mind, you're in sovereign territory. A nation on display, just not a nation in the real world. The motif of independence hits you from the moment you walk in and confront a near wall-sized great seal of this old new republic, complete with bear and star, but also changed to reflect Sternberg's plans for his utopia.
It's a little bit different than the state of California one, only in very minor ways. It no longer has 31 stars, it only has one. It has a different font, Optician Sans, which is the font used to see if you have vision. And Minerva, the goddess, is looking in the opposite direction. So it's meant to make you think it's the real seal at a quick glance, but in reality, there's just these subtle changes.
The first room of the exhibition is set up like a gift shop. T-shirts, hoodies, flags, lawn signs, posters. The country needs revenue, right? Well, exhibitions sure do. There's even a pocket-sized booklet for sale of the Constitution of the Free Republic of California. And you know what? It sounds kind of familiar.
We, the people of California, in order to form a more perfect and peaceful society, establish justice, ensure tranquility. This sounds very much like the United States Constitution.
Well, I went through a variety of constitutions, and of course the U.S. one had to play a significant role. Also, more modern ones were a little bit more appropriate. So Finland, for one, redrafted its constitution in 2011, I believe, and the EU wrote a report on it 5 years later. So that became a little bit more of a focus, but it was really those two and a little of Nepal's new constitution that came into play. But in the end, it's completely different than all of those.
What's one part of this constitution, Cole, that you would see in here that you would never see in a constitution in a modern society of planet Earth?
Well, there's a bunch of portions that are fairly different, but one obvious one to point to is Section 13 of Article 2, the right to a healthy environment. It mandates constitutionally that our country would be carbon neutral and fossil fuel independent in 10 years, which is a moonshot in this constitution and probably the most difficult thing to actually accomplish.
That's something Thomas Jefferson was not thinking of, right?
No, but if he were here today, I'm sure he'd be very, very worried about the same thing.
Now, the floor in the biggest room of the exhibition is covered with a green astroturf-type rug. There's a frame here around the words, "No Great Compromise."
That compromise was the compromise that convinced the slave states to sign the Constitution, but has created a situation today where 70 Californians equal one Wyomingite in terms of voting power in the Senate. So we've reached such a dramatic difference in how much our votes count for that we're really not a democracy or a republic or an equal state whatsoever. I mean, not to mention voter suppression and all the other issues that we have in regards to voting.
Let's go talk about the credenza here, this beautiful mid-century credenza that looks like there should be a radio with music playing, and probably if we weren't here with microphones, the music would be playing, wouldn't it?
Yes, well, there's a whole actual music catalog that goes with this idea of a free Republic of California, but I focused in just for this exhibition on California Dreaming. One, it reiterates this idea of California as having a potential for being a dreamy place. It's also a little bit creepy, which I enjoy because we're dealing with disturbing things. And California is by no means perfect whatsoever. So it is still this dream, not an actual bit of perfection.
You say there are no politics involved here. This is dripping with politics. I mean, come on.
I admit there's political underpinnings to this, for sure.
Underpinnings? You have your own flag.
Okay, it's fairly political visually.
You drafted a constitution. and again, it's all good. I mean, this is a dream of yours,
sure,
to invite others into this dream as well. But what are you telling people?
Well, I admit that this is a political discussion, especially visually, but the things that I'm hoping will change should not be political issues. And only in America are they political issues. I mean, pretty much. Having one vote equal one vote be a political issue is an American idea. Having climate change deniers is largely an American idea. I mean, police violence, guns, all of these things don't have to be political things. Like, why is rational gun control political, except that we made it political? So my hope is that these things turn apolitical, and they're just obvious things we need to fix.
A huge amount of work went into all of this, the Great Seal, the flag, the Constitution. It's just part of an exhibition on display as if to say, see, look at how easy it is to assemble a more people-oriented society. And whatever your thoughts on whatever he has to say about any issue, big or small, he says he knows it's not easy. There will be pushback. This, for all intents and purposes, is a work in progress.
I mean, well, my hope is just to push for change. So it's a dream, but my hope is that parts of the dream become a reality. I'm not crazy enough to think that everything in here could come true immediately, but over time, just any steps in the right direction help.
Cole Sternberg, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks,
Steve. It's so nice to meet you.
Good having you. Nice to meet you, too.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, as Cole Sternberg dreams of the utopian republic of tomorrow, nearby residents are speaking out about the harsh realities of today and yesterday. El Segundo, an oceanside city of roughly 16,000 people just south of LAX, is overwhelmingly white. And now a group called El Segundo for Black Lives is confronting what it says is the city's racist legacy.
Racism does land on the body.
The substitute teacher had suspected I'd been high or
had smoked weed before class.
What happened to us on August 30th was the first time for me personally that I've been attacked for my race.
Even though I'm not doing anything, even though I'm not speeding, I still think back to all the felony stops and all the times that I've had guns drawn.
They said, I think we should go by your middle name, which is Dolly, because it's a little bit more appropriate for our company.
For the police to come knock on my door was just another level of blatant racism. And that really broke my soul.
A new documentary called Black in Mayberry tells the personal stories of more than a dozen black residents of El Segundo, including Violet Gonzalez-Baird, who joins me right now, along with the producer of the documentary, Tanya Taylor. Welcome to you both.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Tanya, I'm going to start with you, because why the title Black in Mayberry? What is the story behind the name? I know what Mayberry is. It's from the Andy Griffith Show, right?
That's correct. And you know that the show and El Segundo itself has the reputation for being practically all white and being this idyllic, by-the-sea, quaint little town where everything's all fluffy bunnies and butterflies. It's never been a place where a space has been provided or recognition for black residents has been provided. So to put the word black in front of Mayberry is actually quite a contrast. It may as well be black and white together.
El Segundo is 72% white, according to the 2019 census, but that number used to be even bigger. So talk a little bit, Tanya, about the history that led to the city's demographics.
So El Segundo was once a sundown town, and for those who do not know what a sundown town is, it's a city or a place where people of color, generally at the time black people, were made to know that they were not welcome in the city after dark. El Segundo had a lot of black people working at Chevron. However, despite the fact that they were working pretty much in the city, they were not permitted to have either residence here or to be here after dark. We were made aware that there used to be a welcome sign that said, you know, no blacks.
Mm. When did you move to El Segundo, Tanya? And did you notice right away that it was so white?
We moved here in 2020. I can't say that I noticed that it was so white. Being somebody who grew up in the UK, I'm very much accustomed to being one of very few black people. What struck me more was the fact that people wanted it to stay white. Having been a part of El Segundo for Black Lives and organizing and joining the protests with that group, it was shocking to me how many people were frustrated at the fact that anyone wanted to mention the word black in El Segundo. They wanted it to stay this Mayberry, seaside, all-white, quaint little town.
As I mentioned, you interviewed more than a dozen people who told their own personal stories. These are sort of vignettes that surrounds race and racism in El Segundo. And one of them was Violet. And Violet, we'll get to you in a second. I want to hear what you had to say in the film.
There are so many people who like to joke about people like George Floyd and Jacob Blake. Like literally today, I was walking past like these group of boys in my grade. And they were like, yo, Violet, have you seen the video of the protesters getting shot? Yeah, that was funny. And I was like, oh, okay. I feel like personally it's my job to educate people on all the world issues. And it's like, I sometimes have to tell myself to like stop because I'm like, you're only 13.
What do you try to say or do, Violet, when you hear a racist remark like that or experience some sort of aggression or microaggression?
Well, I don't know. When I hear like racist comments, I try my hardest to compose myself and not like go absolutely crazy. But I try to just correct people and be like, hey, that is not all right. You shouldn't be saying stuff about people who have done absolutely nothing to you.
Do you agree with Tanya that people around you want to keep El Segundo how it is or how it's been?
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised, especially because a lot of old people do live here. But in my experience with the people of El Segundo, I think I just know a lot of more progressive people who want El Segundo to be more diverse and to actually work on the racism that happens in this town. But I do agree with Tanya that there are definitely a lot of people who want to keep El Segundo the way it was.
You and your mom were both interviewed separately, by the way, for this project. What was it like sharing your own experience and then your mom sharing hers?
Yeah, it was very it's interesting to like see my mom get emotional and upset over the racism that she's experienced, because I don't really get to see her be like that, especially when it comes to racism, because she doesn't talk about it a lot, but there are times when she will. It's like very cathartic, I guess, because I was like, this is a society that we live in.
I want to play another clip, Tanya, from a man named Wendell.
Especially now with everything that's coming out and everything that's kind of being torn open, it's kind of like the Band-Aid is being ripped off and you're seeing the wound for the first time, a wound that I was blind to, a wound that I'm starting to get a sense of, and I quite frankly, it's leaving me drained, you know? Now I'm starting to question if something was a microaggression or not. I never questioned that before, and now it's starting to seep in.
I think a lot of white people, Tanya, started seeing that wound for the first time with the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd on the street of Minneapolis. And it's interesting that a black man like Wendell is too. I mean, what was your reaction to what he had to say?
To your point, with the murder of George Floyd, I think a lot of people began to rethink their experiences. Now, one of the things I want to make very clear is that, just as Violet mentioned, her mother doesn't speak to her. It's not like her mother speaks to her every day about racism and the racism she experiences. And most of the time, we're trying to escape that nightmare. So we try to live in a world where we don't have to think of ourselves through the lens of racism. And I think Wendell is one of those people who has pushed to not permit racism to limit his experiences in life. However, if he does look closely, if we all look closely, moments that happen to someone like George Floyd or Breonna Taylor does make you rethink the type of society that you're living in. And it makes you rethink things that you thought were once innocent that may not have been so innocent.
Violet, as you continue to grow up in El Segundo, what do you want for your city? What are the things that you want, and what do you tell your classmates?
I just want El Segundo to grow. And like, what I really want is for people to start understanding each other and to listen and to understand that there are real things going on in the world. And just because you don't acknowledge them, it doesn't mean that they're fake or they're not really going on.
I want to thank you both. Again, it's a powerful documentary. Violet Gonzalez-Baird, who stars in the film Black and Mayberry, which was, by the way, produced by Tanya Taylor. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can watch the film for free online at blackinmayberry.com. Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Before you let us go, a quick reminder about your style. Your hair, or even your lack of hair, is all you. How you cut it, clip it, style it, dye it, spray it, etc., etc. It's all you. So it can't be that much of a stretch for you to project your style, no matter how good or bad, on your dog. Enter the people who do that, and then some. Dog groomers, very talented ones, are gathering this weekend at the Groom Expo West in Pasadena. Folks come from far and wide to hear from experts, to compete, to visit the trade show for everything pet styling and creative grooming. So here to preview it for us is industry dog grooming veteran Terry DiMarino. Terry, welcome to you.
Hello, Steve. Thanks for having me here today.
All right. Well, it's nice to have you. I saw this picture of a dog, Terry, a super cute little poodle with the face of Pennywise from It styled into its fur. Now, I can't unsee that. Part of me is horrified. Part of me is like, wow, that is some talent. I mean, why do people do things like that?
Why not? It's while some people may wonder why and what we're doing, and they may say, oh, the poor dog. Let me tell you, the one that really benefits is the dog. They get a lot of attention, and this is what they like. It does take a certain dog and a certain groomer to be able to pull these things off. The dog has to have the right coat and condition. It also has to be patient. And most of them are very, very good, very, very patient. And the groomer has to know the proper products to use. All the products that are being used, by the way, are pet approved. They're all safe for use on pets. But you have to know the application techniques to make it look good. Anybody can throw color on a dog, but can you make it look right?
I do want to play devil's advocate for just a second, though, Terry. And again, not to be combative or anything, but what about all these people who are doing all these things to this dog? You know, I mean, dogs can get freaked out, and you've got all these people working on a dog who, by the way, didn't ask for this. What do you say to the naysayers?
Well, I can appreciate that, and it does take a certain dog. Some dogs, if they do, as you say, freaked out, or they're not crazy about it, they're usually not crazy about the grooming process to begin with. So, of course, this wouldn't be a good candidate for that. But if you've got a cute little dog or a doodle or a poodle or whatever, and they're light-colored or even a dark-colored, you can add a little bit of color, a little bit of pizzazz, maybe some feathers or hair extensions or a little bit of glitter. Why not? Why not? It's fun. It gives your dog that little extra oomph and also just that attention. And the grooming process itself is a wonderful bonding process between the owner and a dog. Just to be fussed over. You know what it's like when you go for a massage or a pedicure or a manicure. You sit back and you enjoy the process. A good dog will do the same.
For folks who've never heard or who've, you know, been to something called a groom expo, and by the way, this is not open to the public, right?
That is correct. This is industry only, yes.
What is it like?
Well, this is where groomers from all around the country will come to. It is a trade show, an industry trade show. So they come to see the latest, greatest new products, new equipment, new techniques. There's also seminars held all weekend long for continuing education, which is something we really, really push. And like any other trade show, you have a competition. And this is going to be 3 days of competition. It's not like an American Kennel Club dog show. We're not judging the physique of the dog. We are judging the groomer's work. And we take a comb to that and we go through and make sure that the scissor work is perfect. The clipper work is correct. All these things get taken into account.
Talk about this, the creative grooming process, Terry. I mean, what have been some of your favorite stylings from expos past?
Oh, wow. Well, as a judge, I look at things a little bit differently than the audience may. Because when I get into looking at a creative style, I am looking at how the dye has been applied. I look at if there's bleeding of the dye from one color to the next. I'm also looking for the precision in scissoring and spraying and difficulty factor. That's another thing as well. There was one that just really stands out in my mind, done by a stylist named Lori Craig from Oklahoma, and it was Phantom of the Opera. Another one was a Native American display with eagles and just all kinds of stuff. Sometimes they can end up putting too much on the dog. Sometimes simpler is better. But they still want to see, they want to see style. We want to see precision. So what might really look good from the audience might not place in the judge's eye because it might be a little bit of sloppy color or sloppy scissoring or sloppy airbrushing or something like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. What is it that you love so much about what you do?
Oh, dog groomers groom dogs because we like dogs better than people. I shouldn't say that. That's probably not the best thing to say. But we have, it's dogs are unconditional. They're there. It is, your average groomer is a very artistic person. We may not know, you know, our business aspects of balancing checkbooks might not be up there. But the compassionate and the creative side of our brain is there. So we're kind of marching to a different drummer. And groomers, we just love working with the dogs and the cats. Let's not forget about cats. Cat grooming is a big thing as well. So we just love working with the animals. There's no two ways about it.
Terry DiMarino, groomer, pet styler. She'll be speaking, by the way, at the Groom Expo West that starts tomorrow over in Pasadena. Terry, thanks.
Steve, thank you very much.
You've got to see some of the pictures of these dogs to believe it. Check them out at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. And while you're there, sign up for our podcast, too. Catch all the stories whenever it works for your schedule. And download the podcast, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Tomorrow, California again in a drought. How's that threatening the textile industry, which uses a good bit of water? And billionaires seem to like going to the edge of space. If you had the money, would you stay there? How LA is rocketing to be a space tourism hub. Jenna Cagle, Jackie Sedley, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, and Christian Bordahl, all instrumental in this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears, and have a good night.